Okay, next on the agenda is regulations, professional standards, board regulations for discussion or action. Casey Montanay, Chair of the Professional Standards Board, will review four regulations for action. We will let you go ahead and do the four regulations. We will do this motion, or all four regulations, in just one motion. So if there are any questions, we'll ask afterwards. All righty, you're up.
Okay, good evening. My name is Casey Montanay, and thank you for having me. First, I'm going to talk about 1591, School Principal and Assistant School Principal. It was published on September 1st, 2024, and received three identical comments. Each stated that they disagree with the proposed regulation because it excludes speech-language pathologists from working in schools and employed by districts from ever obtaining a principal or assistant school principal certificate. And they feel that the speech-language pathologists, the SLPs, should be afforded the same career advancement opportunities as any other educator and be permitted to complete a principal certificate program and advance in their career. At the PSB meeting, Dr. Bradshaw presented the board with the definition of an educator, which is a person licensed and certified by the state to engage in the practice of instruction, administration, or other related professional support services, including charter schools, pursuant to rules and regulations by the Professional Standards Board and approved by the State Board of Ed. The term educator does not include substitute teachers. She pointed out to the board that SLPs are not educators because they are not listed under Chapter 12, but they are licensed by the Board of Speech Language Pathologists and Audiologists under the Division of Professional Regulation. So after deliberation, the board determines that while the question of whether to bring these professionals under the umbrella of educator does deserve further research, there was no reason to delay our proposed regulation while we're doing that research. And currently, as non-educators, they do not qualify. Some questions that the board asked about researching included, number one, does the field as a whole desire licensure as an educator? Number two, do other specialist groups desire it as well? And number three, how do other states treat these professionals? So with that, are there any questions from the board?
Any questions, board members?
Thank you for that clarification.
If there are no questions, is there a motion to approve regulations 1591, 1592, 1593, and 1594 as presented?
Griffin, I move that we approve regulation 1591, regulation 1592, regulation 1593, and regulation 1594 as presented.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Latavia, I second.
Latavia, second. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Next, we will present six regulations for information. Please note that regulation 1596 was presented last month by Dr. Bradshaw and is on our agenda again. Agenda again because it's now been published in a register of regulations. Okay, you're up again.
Okay, so if I may, I'm going to present 1550, 1542, 1543, 1544, and 1550 together because all of them have identical edits that codify the modified 91-day process, which has been presented to you all in previous regulations. I know Ms. Smith has recently provided you all with the one-pager explaining that process. The only other amendment is in Regulation 1544, Secondary Social Studies Teacher, which includes a refreshed praxis exam. ETS revises its test each decade or so as needed, and the new praxis underwent a multi-state standard setting study and was also reviewed by a panel of Delaware educators and higher ed faculty who approved the new passing score. Both exams will be accepted until the current exam sunsets in 2025.
Any questions? Okay, proceed, please.
And that is all the information I have for you tonight.
Okay. Well, I don't think there are any questions. I was asking you to go ahead and move on to the next one, please, if 1596, where we're supposed to discuss that.
I just have some questions on it.
We have some questions on 1596. If you have if you'd like to answer, please.
So,
sure. Well, I think
depending upon the question, will determine who is best positioned to answer it. So,
yeah. Okay. Casey, in taking a look at 1596, I'm thinking back to when we first saw 1596. And correct me if I'm wrong, but that was posed to us as a solution for current charter school administrators who are not licensed and certificated. It was proposed initially, am I correct, to help those people reach licensure and certification, but it was specifically for those people that were lacking the licensure and certification. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I guess my first question is, why was the language changed then in 1.1 and 1.3 so that now no longer is the case, but it is basically creating charter school leader certificate that goes beyond just those initial people and now extends to anybody who would be hired from here on out. What was behind that decision to make this move?
I can speak from, and if anyone, I know Secretary Holodick may have something to say here as well, but the board initially adopted Regulation 1596 in 2022 in order to certify admin, as you said. But after Senate Bill 311 clarified that each charter school can have one head of school that does not need certification, that's when we started the revision process. So that way we would be in alignment with Senate Bill 311. We did at the time, as that process was occurring, we did work collaboratively with both DOE and the charter schools. When we had first proposed our initial regulation, there was a lot of resistance to the regulation because charter leaders felt very strongly that the role of a charter leader is different than the role of leaders in other district schools. And we received plenty of public comments that supported that opinion, which is when we then turned to work more closely with the charter schools as well as with DOE, so that we could come up with what is it that the board is not seeing from the charter perspective, as well as to see really what next steps they were hoping for, and that we could license as many of our charter leaders as it made sense in terms of their context.
I can appreciate what you've just said. However, in taking a look at the legislation that was passed, it created or carved out that the head of school did not need to be licensed and certificated. However, it was creating a category called instructional administrator that did need to be licensed and certificated. And in taking a look at the definition of instructional administrator, it says it's a charter school administrator who supervises and evaluates educators, instructs students by means of designing and implementing curriculum, or instructs, trains, mentors, or coaches teachers. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that sounds a lot like the responsibilities of principals in our traditional public schools. And yet, when I take a look at the prescribed education, knowledge, and skill requirements that are being proposed in this particular piece, I'm noticing that the applicant no longer needs a master's degree. It's been reduced to a bachelor's. That They need to complete the alternative routes, obviously. But then when it starts talking about experiences, you've got experience as an educator, leadership experience in an educational or other setting. What do you mean by other setting?
So when we were going through, I will state that the PSB did have extensive conversations about that experience list in terms of level of comfort with the items that were there. Ultimately, where we landed was that there are currently, and the charter schools do hope to continue to bring in people with a variety of experiences, even if they are not in education. And the hope was to be able to have kind of a catch-all for those other categories and then be able to use some discretion in terms of could those experiences actually count in terms of that experience list. We did also feel that the instructional administrators were very similar to the principals in schools. And one of the positives that the board saw with that is initially the push against charter leader from the board was that we desired certification for charter leaders. As the process had gone on, because now we've been working on this for quite some time, it became clear that the charter schools felt very strongly about that division that you described, where the head of school has a different role than that of the instructional administrator, the person who is essentially the principal of the school. And the board felt that overall, the most important thing was for those who oversee our educators who are licensed and certified. They wanted anyone who was evaluating those people to be licensed and certified. So when it came down to what was most important to the board, the fact that the instructional administrators, those who serve in that essentially principal role, being licensed and certified was the most important to us. Where when we think about that head of school piece, we did acknowledge that there are positions in districts that don't necessarily oversee educators directly and might be working more in the business world, et cetera, which is why the board overall felt comfortable with that change as it was occurring.
I'll be honest with you, I'm still struggling with this, especially with the way that is currently worded, which would indicate that looking at the options here, I could have 2 years of military leadership experience and if you're accepting any other setting, 2 years in a managerial position in a bank and come in with no classroom or educator experience and yet be expected to supervise, evaluate, instruct, train, mentor, and coach teachers. And I really struggle to see how you can do that if you've never had experience in a school, let alone experience as a teacher. I had the opportunity over the past month to talk to the vice president of the Washington, D.C. State Board of Education, who is also an administrator with KIPP Charter Schools in D.C., well-known organization of charter schools, asking them what they required for any of their principals at the KIPP schools. And he was very clear, it was a master's degree. It was 5 years of teaching experience. It was experience of up to 5 years as a teacher leader in a school. And then they had to go through an intern program and serve for 1 year before they were allowed to take over the principalship in a building that they were going to be given. I am really struggling to understand how, with the regulation that's just been approved for current school assistant principals and principals in traditional public schools, why those same standards are going to be abandoned here for charter school leaders. Casey, I'm really, really struggling with that. I can understand that if you were looking for a solution for those people that currently are not licensed and certified so that you can at least give them something, I can understand that. But to say from here on out, we're moving from what we currently say is necessary for traditional public schools and will accept less than, I'm struggling with that. The other piece I did not see here was an exam where these people have to demonstrate their proficiency in leadership. It was my understanding in a regulation that was passed this past August for alternative routes programs that there has to be a demonstration of proficiency through some sort of evaluation, and praxis is missing from this document. And I see nothing here that demonstrates that they have to in any way demonstrate proficiency from the ARTC program that's being proposed.
So I can speak a little bit to what you're saying here about DC. I will say that the board did receive some comments about parents who did feel that they were surprised about the conversation because they had assumed that charter leaders would have the same aligned regulation as our typical leaders in other buildings. But as a board, one of the main things that we had talked about was the fact that as of the start of this regulation, we had for decades had unlicensed leaders in our charter schools. So when it came to ultimately what is most important to the board, while we did and many still do personally believe, although they are moving in the best interest of the board and in terms of our teachers and our students, many do personally still struggle with that permanence piece. But at the same time, prior to this regulation, we also were not enforcing any licensure for these charter leaders at all. So from the board's perspective, and then also in order to align with the Senate bill, we did need to include that separation of instructional administrator and head of school. But ultimately, we found that this was a much needed step in the right direction, and the ARTC program, because it is being worked with DOE very closely. I know Dr. Saylor can probably speak to that. I know he spent a lot of time working with that. We did feel that certification for those directly overseeing educators was our top priority, which is ultimately where we landed. There was discussion about a praxis exam. We did not find one that really aligned with what was being done here, but I don't know if Dr. Saylor wants to elaborate a little bit, because I know that was part of the conversation with ARTC as well.
I do think it's important to underscore something that Ms. Montney just shared, which is since the inception of the charter law, we as a state have never held charter leaders to the same standards as traditional districts, right? So I do agree with Casey that we are moving in the right direction, and that there was clearly, when this sort of came to a head a couple of years ago, there was a philosophical divide in terms of what the charter law meant in regard to flexibility, discretion, autonomy of leaders of charter schools. So some people interpreted the original charter bill to mean those leaders need to be licensed and certified. And there were others, some of which were involved in the writing of the bill, who said, absolutely not. The intent of charter that charter law was to sort of, you know, free them of the system. And so this, I think, is I wouldn't say a good meeting in the middle as much as sensible, in that the instructors, the administrators who were in charter schools working and with teachers and supervising, supporting them, have the kind of training needed to be successful. And that's where Michael comes in. So, Casey, I have to say, you did an excellent job of sort of explaining it all. At the end of the day, I don't know that people are going to agree on it or be overly comfortable, because it is, to an extent, philosophical. There are people who I've talked with who have said, this is ridiculous. Charter schools are different. They shouldn't have, their teachers and their administrators shouldn't have to be licensed and certified. There are people that believe that. And then there are people who believe they should have the exact same. This sort of meets in the middle, so to speak.
But we hold charter schools to the same standards that we hold traditional public schools. That becomes evident after having sat through the CSAC process this morning and having sat through numerous CSAC meetings during my term here on the board. We have the same expectations of those charter schools, that students are going to be instructed and instructed well, because their teachers are well prepared and have the pedagogy and skills and knowledge to do the job well, that their principals are going to be credentialed so that they too can help the teachers. Plus, if they're being given, as you can see in the definition here, a responsibility for designing and implementing curriculum, in one of the CSAC meetings, one of the faults, the deficiencies that was discussed, and I won't get into the particulars, but it was curriculum. There were some major concerns about curriculum. Coming from an education background, I really, really get concerned, and I look at the two regulations and say, you're asking an instructional administrator to do what a current building principal does. So how can you say you can have less than in terms of requirements than, say, Megan, who is a traditional public school principal? It's like speaking out of two sides of your mouth. I really am struggling with this.
Yeah.
As I said, I could understand it as a stopgap measure. I don't want to see people losing their jobs. And I understand the confusion that surrounded the charter school regulation prior to it being stated that people need to be licensed and certificated. I get that. And were you to say, okay, but this will be for just those people, but going forward, we should maintain what's currently expected.
But it hasn't been. You just said what's currently, for the past 30 years, that has not been the case.
No, but didn't the DAGs come forward and say, but this is what it is meant to be?
They had an opinion.
Yeah,
well. And then there was a bill that was going to make everything very clear in terms of no license and certification necessary.
Head of school, but for instructional administrator, yes, it is required.
Well,
if we're going to move the needle, why not move the needle and hold them to the same standards as a public school leader? Public school
leader. Public school leader.
Right. So why not hold them to the same standard? And is it because there's a fear, like Deb said, of people losing their jobs? What's the repercussion of moving it all the way, like holding them to this?
I think charter schools mm-hmm. would say, that it's not less than, but rather different than. And that if we want charter schools to operate differently, we should give them more autonomy to hire who they want. So I will share and use your example. If I were on a charter school board and someone from the military in leadership wanted to be, we as a board wanted to hire them and they had no background in education, but had success in the military leading, I'm sort of showing my cards, I would be okay. As Secretary of Ed, I'm okay giving that leader the authority, that school, that charter school board, the authority to hire that kind of leader if they so desire.
But how does that leadership translate into teaching or instruction or coaching in an educational setting?
Well, before, because I understand that I do. I think my struggle is, in my mind, that would be the definition of a non-instructional charter leader.
That is correct.
But here, for the instructional charter leader, who is the person who has to get the certificate, we're allowing the same standard. I believe there should be a different standard for the head of school who is running operations, could be a leader in industry for years, but that's not what, as I'm reading it, this says. This is talking about the instructional leader is the one who needs this certificate, and yet the instructional leader is being held to a standard that's much lower than the instructional leader in any of our traditional schools.
So I'll let Michael address that piece because he's worked very close. This is the tougher question I recognize to answer. I would say the charter folks who have been at the table would say it's not lesser than, it's different than. And I'll go back to, it's a whole lot better than nothing, which is what we've had for the last 30 years. Mike.
Well, before you answer that, I don't disagree with anything you said, but it could also be the same as we've had for the last 30 years. Because if the standard is not less than, but different than, but it's pretty much, like if we could go through every charter leader for the last 30 years and find that they all met this standard that is currently here proposed, then we haven't changed anything at all except to codify it by making it a regulation. I'll stop because I want to hear the answer, but I'm...
Michael, why didn't you come up to the table? The hot seat.
Just inform us.
So Michael Saylor, Director of Educator Excellence here at the department. And I don't know that I can change minds, but I can certainly try to explain some of the questions that came up. So the one thing that's a little different here to keep in mind is that there was a recently signed Senate bill, Senate Bill 311. Within that Senate bill, it did define instructional administrator, and that's the definition that you see in front of you in the regulation. The other piece that was mentioned in that Senate bill is an alternative certification program, which is what we're trying to do. I can say that I work very closely with the Charter Network on developing what could be an excellent program to prepare leaders for charter schools. However, we've gotten to a point now where that without a regulation that allows for that, which is aligned to Senate Bill 311, my office can't act on it. So what we're waiting for is a regulation to be approved so that they can submit their application for their alternative certification program, which is what's mentioned in 311, this alternative program, so that we can approve it. And what that looks like then is that in Regulation 291, within that application, there will have to be a proficiency assessment at the end. So within their application, they're going to have to identify what that proficiency assessment is, whether that be Praxis or another assessment that our office approves. And once an approval happens for any of our ed prep programs, there is annual data collection that's required, and those programs are then renewed every 2 years. There's a process for any program then that is underperforming based on the our program's called a report card. I don't like that word, but it virtually is. It rates your program. So if a program is struggling and not performing and reaching, you know, the agreed upon levels in regulation, in this case 291, that program then goes on improvement and has to create an improvement plan. If they don't improve, the program then is shut down. So there are checks and balances in place for all of our programs. What we're asking for now is the passage of a regulation so that we can move forward with getting an alternative program approved.
But if this question, I'm gonna ask a question. Because I recognize that there are a lot of people around the table, and I do, believe me, understand that the charter law was intended to give great latitude for innovation on a lot of different things, and I respect that. I guess what from those currently involved in the charter community would have been the pushback against a standard for their instructional school leaders that's a bit more stringent than, I'll be honest, I'm gonna just say it the way I feel it. Meredith Griffin could apply for this job given the way it's written here, because I have more than 5 years of leadership experience in a setting, and go through a program and then be considered in the Delaware education community on par with one of our traditional district principals, who I'd probably be calling every day to figure out what am I supposed to be doing with the people that I'm leading. Not that I'm not a good leader, but that's not my lane. And so I'm just trying to understand, because I know there were other voices at the table, what in their mind would have been the harm in maybe not the same as, but closer to, because although every 5 years or 20 years for one who has done it successfully for, I mean, 10 years for one who's done it successfully for a long time, we have a way to go in and help charters be better or do the right thing for students. To me, as one who used to serve on the board of a charter school that got closed because it failed, I think if we had had something that said, this is the kind of leader you got to make sure you have in there, maybe that school, maybe not, probably not, but maybe that school would have had a better chance than it wound up having. And I don't see a minus for the standard we have. So I'm just trying to hear, was there something that if you said it here, I'd be like, oh, you know what? I never thought about that. That's good. Never mind. Griffin is fine.
Some of that, I believe, is philosophical on the value of experience outside of maybe a traditional school, right? I don't know that anyone's going to change your mind on that. But I would say that if you would want to go through that program, you would have to do an internship like any other program. So I don't see people outside very often saying, you know what, I'm going to quit my job so that I can do the required internship as well to be able to do this. I think what I would see is a pipeline, like in many of our other traditional public schools, where teachers are going to be tapped to go through this program, that most of the experience will probably be in a school setting. And that's what I
that's very helpful. That what you just said, if I can understand this more if I see it through the lens of it creating in what are intentionally non-traditional settings for a pipeline for them to grow Indigenous leaders in their settings. That makes a lot more sense to me than just reading it on paper. So I appreciate that.
Anything further? A lot of questions on this. Of course, I'm sure there'll be more questions. If you have any more questions, send them to Kathleen and let's get them distributed them out and get them answered.
Mr. President, Chair,
Reverend Powell.
Reverend Powell, thank you. I don't want to rehash. I know we deliberated on this quite a bit, but my question, my thought was more in performance at the end of the continuum of whether the public schools or charter schools are performing historically the same, better, or worse. Because sometimes when we talk about closing charters, there are some LEAs, public schools, that probably need to be closed also if we're talking about performance. So we hold them at a different standard. And so I don't know if that's the answer to, I just wanted to know historically what's the performance, the bottom line, because if there has been charter schools that are performing well and excellent above the other schools, and then we're going to consider the leadership of those charter schools to conform with leadership of the public schools, to me, it's a bottom line performance conversation. So I don't know if we've talked about that.
That's an answer to that. It's a tough one to answer. This is going to sound like I'm really riding the fence, but I truly believe this. There are, you know, I've been in education for quite some time now, and I would say there are traditional districts and public schools that have very strong leaders who are licensed and certified, and I've also seen very weak leaders who are licensed and certified, and I've known many charter school leaders who are licensed and certified and are very strong and successful, and I've known some who are not licensed and certified and are strong and successful, leading very reputable, well-respected charter schools right now, and some that are not. So I just don't know that. I think the success of schools, certainly leadership has a lot to do with it, but I don't think it would be fair to say the success or failure of a school is solely based on leadership alone, and that we can make judgments on this very important topic. I will say, Dr. Griffin, the example that you shared using yourself, my experience through this tells me that the charter folks would say, absolutely, we would want to be able to hire a Dr. Griffin who has all this leadership experience. And if he's not going to be an instructional leader, we would have him lead our school. And if he's going to be an instructional, would need to go through that program. Yeah, they would want that flexibility for sure.
And I before that, I think the explanation at the end helped me see it differently than just reading it. I saw it initially. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Thank you. Again, any further questions, send them to Kathleen. Let's get them distributed them out and get our answers for us. All right, next on the agenda, Delaware Department of Education regulations for discussion or action. Dale Matusevich, Director of Exceptional Children Resources, is here to review 3 regulations for action. Mr. Matusevich.
You're up.
Again.
Hopefully these are final, but we'll have some more coming throughout the year. So we are here tonight once again, hopefully for final approval of regulations 922, 923, and 925. You have seen those over this past year, almost for a full 12 months now, at least a full 10 months. We first went out for public comment January 1 of 2024. Had public meetings there, came back, received some public comments, made some additional revisions that were substantial revisions, went back out for public comment July 1, 2024. We again had public hearings on July 23rd and July 30th, 2024, and we're bringing these regulations to you now for approval effective today to be implemented July 1, 2025. I believe you were sent a summary of the public comments and our responses to those. So with that, I would open it up to any questions for the comments, or I could go through the comments, each one.
Any questions? I don't think the comments are necessary. If there are no questions, is there a motion to approve regulations 922, 923, and 925 as presented?
Griffin, I move that we approve regulation 922, 923, and 925 as presented.
Regulation made a motion. I need a second.
Stephen
has seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstention. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Public comment on regulations. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for public comment on regulations. Ms. Smith, do we have anybody signed up for public comment on regulations?
We do not.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, state board business. Thank you, Dale.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Committee and meeting reports. There was an opportunity for members to provide information in written reports made available on the e-board on any events or committee meetings attended since the last meeting. Would anybody like to add anything further? Absolutely.
I did not submit a report, but I'll tell you what I've been doing. I listened to the literacy webinar, which featured Sage. I'll second everything that Deb said and just add that it was evident from hearing the students speak that they understand the challenges of literacy, but also understand the broader impact of literacy, like, you know, health, social issues, mental health, economic stability. I mean, they didn't use those words per se, but they definitely understood what's the broader impact of all of this, which was kind of enlightening for me to see. I completely enjoyed this. And then I don't know if I should mention it here or tell somebody else, but one suggestion that I had for Sage, maybe you can take this back, is maybe next time you guys can discuss digital literacy. It's kind of a, you know, big thing now. The other thing that I did, which was really kind of neat, is I went to the Academy of Dover today to tour their school. I feel like that school is a hidden gem, as we saw at our last board meeting. I really like the way that Dr. Marinucci created a sense of community, and it's more like a family there, so much so that the eighth graders at graduation find it really hard to leave and actually don't want to leave. The other thing that I really like there is she showed me this community space that she has. It's sort of like a courtyard in between their buildings, and she's done such a great job with it. It's like kid-sized gardens, kid-sized patio furniture. It's a place for the kids to hang out. It's a place for them to, you know, do community service. And the other thing that I really, really appreciated, she told me about how she uses data to make decisions, which is something that's important to me. So she said she uses data to inform curriculum and create academic support services for students. I also liked that she shared with me that the students that come to, they don't call it summer school, they call it summer academy. The students that come to summer academy want to be there, and they come, and when it's over, they say, can't we just extend it for 3 more weeks, and then we go right into the school year. So all of those things kind of make you think, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Yeah. The other thing that I did was I went to a CSEC committee meeting. This is my first one ever. Is it okay to say which school I went? Which school? No. Charter School of Newcastle. It was a brief meeting, and they seem to be on track for renewal. And what I really appreciate about them is they acknowledge their, I don't want to say deficiencies, but shortcomings, but were willing to seek out assistance to help them fix those issues. So that was really good. The other thing that I did this week or last, I went to an equalization committee meeting, which I learned a lot there and did a lot of research background too. So I learned that there is a very complicated formula that dates back to 1940 that was revised in 1984 and has been frozen since 2009. And I was like, what? So this meeting was mostly an information gathering meeting. So they had consultants come in, ask them, you know, ask a bunch of questions to a group of stakeholders around a table. And I think the biggest challenge is that the equalization formula currently uses outdated property assessments. And so obviously, as you all know, the three counties are in the middle of reassessing property values. And I know for a fact that Kent County is done. They're waiting on the other two. So that's what I've been busy doing. And I feel like I really did learn a lot at all of these places. I think the equalization committee meeting, Sean, as you know, my background is in math and with numbers, was most appealing to me.
Got fun with that one.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a lot to understand that I didn't know going into it. So I left with a lot of questions and got a lot of questions answered. So I did appreciate that.
Well, I sat on a local board 23 years and I still don't understand. Nothing.
It's a lot too. Yeah, it's a complicated formula.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things to just to mention. Again, as already been stated, I did also attend the student literacy panel presentation that was arranged by SAGE, and it was an absolutely fantastic panel. The students were absolutely eloquent, and I was amazed at the amount of research they did prior to the presentation. The facts that they brought to the table were very, very interesting. As an old woman, I feel that the future is in good hands with these students. But Sage, to draw to your attention, I was in the CSAC meeting this morning, and it was interesting to hear that the school mentioned that one of their successes was doing one school, one book. And the minute they mentioned that, I said, yay, Sage would be happy to hear somebody is getting the message that this is a good thing to do. The other thing I want to draw your attention to, I'm your representative, the DPAS 2 Advisory Council. And so we had our first meeting of the year on October 4th. The department did an excellent job of providing information as a wrap up from the previous school year. They highlighted some of the work that's currently being done regarding DPAS 2, which is the previous system, but more specifically for specialists, and taking what used to be identified as professional responsibilities and changing it to reflect more professional growth for them so that it's more closely aligned to DTGSS for teachers. They also noted that in taking a look at the high rate of completion by most districts, the districts are doing well with 92% completion of summative evaluations, 94% completion of growth goals, and the student improvement component 96%. So I think what really impressed me was the intensive work that the department and I've got to give her a shout out, Angela Socorso. She is golden here at this district, going out and doing a lot of the one-on-one coaching with the principals in the buildings, helping them to understand the process and to make it better, especially since it's a coaching model, and really, you know, trying to provide them, for example, here that I mentioned, the learning walk training that they are instituting in 8 different schools, you know, to eventually bring it out to a broader population. The work that Michael is doing as well in taking a look at the piloting, or I won't say piloting, excuse me, field design or field testing this year for the student improvement component, and taking a look at the schools that they are, you know, doing the field testing of this new student improvement component to see, you know, what is working well, what might need to be changed before it's put into a full-blown pilot. And I do want to compliment the department because, again, having experienced over 30 years of evaluation in Delaware, in the past, field testing and piloting wasn't always appreciated. The attitude had been previously, roll it out to the whole state and let's see what happens. And so I really applaud the new approach, which is let's field test it or let's pilot it and make it better before we roll it out statewide. So a lot of good things happening there. And some interesting topics you can see that I've listed there for you for upcoming conversations. If you're interested in setting in on any of these meetings, the next meeting is scheduled for December the 6th. And again, the conversation is always very, very rich with the people that attend these meetings, both principals as well as educators. And so I'd invite you to sit in and hear what they have to say.
Thank you. I think Mr. Kenton has something for us.
Kenton, thank you. The other night, I had the opportunity, along with Sean and Dr. Holodeck, attending the Teacher of the Year banquet, and what an amazing event. If you don't come away from there inspired, I don't call them teachers. I call them motivators. It was amazing. And I've asked Kathleen to line me up to go into the Milford, being I live there, I'm gonna go into the winner's classroom and spend an hour and maybe read a book, and I might even surprise her with a certificate from the Senator Wilson and maybe Representative Shoup to surprise her. So, but when she gets back from her NASB conference, we're gonna work on that. But Sean had asked me to, Sean, you had spoke that evening also. You did a nice job. You kept it brief and to the point, and it was perfect. So I appreciate your comments that night. But I'm on the Government Affairs Committee meeting, and it was only 12 of them. They usually have about 25 states represented. And there was only 12 of them, and the chairman of the committee, he asked a kind of a personal question. He asked everybody to predict who they thought was going to win the presidential election, wow, not who you were going to vote for, who you thought was going to win. And they tallied that up, and it was 9 for Harris and 3 for Trump, which surprised a lot of us. But anyway, I wanted to throw that out. But and I also, like you, I toured the Academy of Dover. Dr. Marinucci, I spent an hour there, and like I said at our last meeting, you keep on keeping on. She's doing a lot right. So I don't know if she's licensed and certified or not, but I thought about that. She is. I'll tell you what, she's got it together. But, that's all my comments. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Oh, boy. Hey, anybody else? Sage.
So thank you, Ms. Stevens and Dr. LaHaga, for your kind words. I look forward to hopefully hosting another one of these events in the future. So a few weeks ago, I had the privilege of attending the New Member Institute of NASB, National Association of State Boards of Education. And it was a wonderful opportunity to learn about how students like me have played a bigger role in shaping educational policy. And the main focus of the event was the importance of student engagement. And we heard from like different college students and former State Board of Education members and how they've made a difference. I'd say the part of the whole experience that I found the most interesting was a discussion of barriers to education and kind of ways to mitigate them. So we explored different ways through discussions to tackle issues like inequality and have equal access to education. And I would say like overall, it definitely gave me a better understanding of different challenges in our education system. And for sure, it inspired me to continue advocating for positive change in our community.
Excellent, thank you. Anybody else?
No written report. I did attend a CSAC meeting for Eastside Charter on Tuesday. There was no PEP meeting this month. I, of course, prepare for the NASB convention.
Chairman Powell?
No particular report, but I did attend CSAC today for Superior. And it was enlightening. and thank Leroy Travis for the training prior to the meeting. I thought that was well received and prepared. So great.
Excellent. Thank you. I just want to thank everybody, the other board members, including myself, who are serving on these CSAC committees. I think it's important that we spread the wealth here on these. It doesn't hurt us at all. I went to the course of teacher year. It was great, Mark. I don't know how Allison May and that group pulls it off, but
they do a nice job.
It's an unbelievable show every year. It's one I really like to go to, and I enjoy it. And I think it's a great job acknowledging, thanking Governor for being a staunch supporter of education over the years. But anyway, enjoy NASB, bring back a lot of information. I heard a couple people say to visit the schools. Please make arrangements through Kathleen to visit the schools if you can. I'm sure some schools don't mind, but if you might walk into a school, you might surprise it being a state board member. You might not be ready for that, or might be a bad day, because they do have bad days. So just work through Kathleen to facilitate these school visits, please. And that's all I have. And we'll move to the executive director's report. Ms. Smith.
Before we do that, sir, can we circle back, please? We did have a
sure thing.
Someone sign up for a public comment on regulations. So if you would read the...
Let me find that, and I'll read that.
Page back.
Public comment on regulations. We will hear from speakers from the sign-up sheet who are present in the meeting room in person first, and we'll recognize speakers logged in via the URL in order that they have signed up. Comments should be limited to 2 minutes for individuals and 3 minutes for organizations. Please note the board typically will not respond to questions or engage in a dialogue with those offering comments during the board meeting. Ms. Smith.
Yes, we do have Kendall Massett from the Charter School Network signed up to provide comment on regulations. So Kendall, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, and we're putting a timer up for 3 minutes. Would you please introduce yourself?
Yes. Good evening. Kendall Massett, Executive Director for the Delaware Charter Schools Network. This school year, we have 24 charter schools serving over 18,450 students. Thank you to Secretary Holodick, Ms. Montagnier, and Michael Saylor for laying out the charter leader regulation, and to Linnea Bradshaw for working with Michael Saylor, myself, and our charter community to create this regulation. To be clear, charter schools are held to a higher standard. Districts are not subject to renewal or closure, but our schools are. The original idea was for us to be different, and again, we are different, but not just from districts, but each other. We believe that there are multiple ways to learn and grow as a leader, and those experiences are just as helpful and insightful for all areas, including instructional leaders. We want to eliminate barriers to growing in a career. We know that professionals like speech pathologists, paraprofessionals, private school professionals, nonprofit leaders, military leaders, and others would bring incredible experience to our schools, including in an instructional standpoint. This regulation would allow for that. But it's not just throwing them in a classroom or throwing them in a school. As Michael Saylor has pointed out, our alternative routes to certification program is rigorous and long and includes an internship. We care about our kids just as much as you do. We're not asking to just throw anybody in a classroom. And I really hope you're not suggesting that that's what we are doing. We are here to answer any questions at another time, not during public comment, to talk through what we see is right for kids. To Secretary Holodick's point, this is philosophical, but if we all agree that we want to see what's best for kids and that that can be accomplished in different ways, then this regulation is the way that we need to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Kendall. Have a good evening. Okay. Back to you, Ms. Smith.
Thank you. And thank you all for your participation and your thoughtful comments and discussion on Monday at your professional development meeting. I did mention that there were some NASB member service offerings that were included in your membership, and those include maybe board effectiveness and maybe a self-assessment tool that you could take advantage of. They offer hours of support in strategic planning, like we had NASB come and do for you in April of 2023. They offer hours of support in committee work or toward a particular issue or challenge. And so as you decide further how you want to move your work along, we can brainstorm which services you'd like to take advantage of through NASB. I did note on my report that the Reading Consortium meeting was to be determined. It has been determined. I've added it to the weekly roundup. The date is Wednesday, December 11th. So that link goes on tomorrow's weekly roundup. And then the last thing is I'm also looking forward to the NASB annual conference and am looking forward to engaging with my peers across the country as well. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Secretary's report.
Sure. You have my written report. I'll just highlight what has already been shared this evening. Shelby Borst is our state teacher of the year. She is a social studies teacher from the Colonial School District, William Penn High School. It was a wonderful evening. Our team, especially Allison May and the other folks in the superintendent's office or secretary's office, just do a fantastic job of organizing that event for our 20 recipients. And I had mentioned in your written report, and on a very positive note, we are a state this year, last year, that grew the number of students who took advanced placement courses and exams while simultaneously increasing the percentage of students passing those exams. So we being Cora and I, had a meeting with College Board now almost a month ago or so, 3 weeks, and went through the data, and it's pretty consistent across the state. And so that is something for us to be proud of, but I would imagine the state board might want to get a bit more granular on that and maybe have our team come in one of the upcoming months and do a short presentation so you can actually look at the data yourself. Thank you.
Any questions for Dr. Holodick?
Just a comment on the AP scores. That's impressive.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. Next on the agenda. Woo. Formal public comment. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for general public comment. Ms. Smith, is there anyone signed up to provide public comment?
Yes, we do have one person online that is signed up for public comment, and that is Halim Hamroun, and I will ask them to restate their name, please, and we will start the 2-minute timer.
Hello. Okay, first, just making sure that I'm audible. But I signed up to talk about two things that I think I would like to see the State Board or the Department of Education here talk about in the coming months and future. And it was mentioned earlier slightly, digital literacy as well as media literacy. Now, they are distinct and different. Digital literacy referring to how we operate and use things like our computers, our social media, and all that kind of stuff. And media literacy applying specifically to mass media and connections. And I do believe that these are areas that need to be focused on or looked into at least for how our schools are going to handle them, because we live in an era of new mass media. I was in school 8 years ago, and the availability of information as well as misinformation that was made to me as I was using a computer then to now has massively changed, right? So I just would hope that we get some kind of interest in looking into that coming up in the future. Discussions of what we're looking at for when we're talking about like third grade literacy rates, well, I think something that needs to be discussed outside of regular reading literacy is how we deal with the media as well as the online space more specifically. And yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, thank you for your time and have a good evening. Okay. Next on the agenda, adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting?
So moved, Stevens.
Don't be so excited here. Stevens made a motion. Is there a second?
Javi
has made a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It is 6:58 p.m. and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, folks. Safe travels. Enjoy your evening.